Danny, I think it's really important that people realize what is actually going on here. And there's many levels to this story with Heath Ledger. Obviously, the first is the tragic loss of any life, of anyone that's age 28, and then someone that's a father to a two-year-old girl.
You bet.
And then someone that has a great gift and talent to bring to the world. So there's loss on many levels. The other level that everyone needs to consider is, although it's not clearly apparent now, it will be, and it'll come out in the next couple of weeks, that Heath Ledger was suffering from depression. See, there's a parallel, Denny, between what happened with Heath Ledger and what happened with Owen Wilson. You'll recall last year in 2007, in fact, you and I were talking about this when we were talking about the top 10 celebrity meltdowns of 2007. We
Yep.
talked about Owen Wilson. Just about 3 months after he broke up with Kate Hudson, there was an incident at his house where he almost overdosed and there was almost death and ambulances were called, etc. And I said my first inkling and intuition was that he was reacting to what every one of us else reacts in the terms of unrequited love, breakups, betrayals, rejection, failed love, etc., or basically emotional pain. It's the same thing here that happened with Heath Ledger, but the results are much more tragic. Heath and Michelle Williams separated about 5 months ago, September of last year. He was in love with her. She was very important to him, but he was also building a family. He has a two-year-old daughter, and his daughter was very important to him, and he said, you know, how it had changed his life. It had changed his perspective, having a child. When there is this sort of breakup, it doesn't matter whether anyone's at fault or not. It doesn't matter why the breakup occurs. What all of us seem to fail to realize is that loss affects all of us. So even if people are in a relationship and one of them realizes, hey, this isn't the relationship for me, it's unhealthy, when that relationship ends, there's loss, there's grieving. Something comes to an end, something comes to a close, and we have to start all over again. The other thing is, there had to have been a deeper sense of pain for someone like Heath, who wanted probably a family for his little two-year-old girl. And he's not, you know, he wasn't your typical player or your typical media junkie.
Not at all.
And so he has a depth to him. You know, he is a three-dimensional person. You also know just from the little vibes that we get in terms of reading or seeing clips of him, not only was he a three-dimensional person, but he was very much down to earth. Because his background, Danny, is that he was a surfer in Australia. You know, he loved surfing. He loved the ocean. He was from Perth, Western Australia. So that just gives you an idea that this person's, you know, very what I call pedestrian, very down-to-earth, very real, very authentic, very organic. And he's going to be affected by these sort of things. Now, here's the other level to everything that we've been talking about. And guys will relate to this, and women need to hear this. We men handle depression very, very differently to the way women handle it. The first thing is we don't even realize it's happening. The second thing is we're in denial. The third is we don't turn anywhere for help. And, you know, as I said a few moments ago, it's going to come out over the next few weeks relating to his story, to Heath Ledger's story. And it was interesting that the superintendent of the building in which he's been living the last few months said that when he'd been seeing Heath Ledger recently and he looked sad. So he noticed it on his face. But we guys, and I'm interested to get your feedback here, Danny, we guys usually aren't even aware what the heck we're feeling. And I don't know, have you experienced sadness or loss or grief or even depression, Danny?
Well, yeah, in the past, I was like that. I mean, now I've learned to be introspective and think what's going on and feel it, and certainly don't hesitate to ask for help. I would never do that. But in the past, yeah, typical guy, I'll tough it out, and everything will be okay, and I don't need any help. And when people would offer help, you know, you do the whole male thing of, no, man, I'm good. You know, that's all right. Thanks for calling.
So how did you handle it? What did you do? Did you just go quiet? Did you shut down? Did you not hang out with other people, or did you turn to a lot of alcohol? What? How did you handle it?
Well, the truth is, at one time many years ago, I don't tell this story often. It's not a big deal, but
see what I can get out of you.
No, this is, but it's true. You know,
I know it's the truth.
I'm not embarrassed by it, but I tried to check into a mental clinic after a breakup. I just felt the walls were closing in on me. I felt physical symptoms like buzzing and my I just. I had never been through anything like that in my life because I really, truly love this woman. We were going to get married, and it was literally when I was on the air, she called and said, I'm moving out. My brother and sister are here, and they're helping me move out. And it was
You're on radio, you're on air, and she calls and tells you, hey, it's done?
Yeah, I didn't put that on the air, but I'm like, hey, everybody, it's 3:30, and your chance to win is album coming up. And the phone rings, and it's her, and I got to finish my shift. I can't just run out. And I went home, and half of everything was gone from the apartment, and it was the weirdest, weirdest thing. I've never felt anything like that, and I've had other heartbreaks, of course, but that one, for some reason, sent me for a loop. So I tried to get into, like, some kind of an outpatient, not even outpatient, you check in, like a rehab thing, only for mental, you know? And I remember the woman took me through it, and this was years ago, and even then it was $600 a day. And I called my station, and they said, well, our insurance only pays half of it, so you're going to have to come up with $300 a day. And I told the woman, I can't afford it. I can't do this, so somehow I'll tough it out. And I did.
But you're unique because you actually went somewhere. Most guys wouldn't. Most guys would go to the bar and have a drink, and
no,
have a lot of drinks.
I come from an alcoholic family, and I will never, ever, ever, never have even come close to being a drug addict, an alcoholic, because I've seen it, I've experienced it, and I hate it. So there's no way, there's nothing, you could cut my arms off, and I still wouldn't want to drink or have drugs or nope.
And you know, Danny, it's important also to, at this point, to define depression. My definition of depression is simply anger turned inwards.
You bet.
Which usually you don't feel justified to express. That's why you turn it inwards, because you don't know what to do with it. So when something happens, like there's a breakup, and you can't really fault anyone, it could be because in the case of Heath and Michelle, their schedules, you know, they're traveling, they're filming, etc., that, you know, might have caused the relationship to part ways, and you don't know who to be angry at. Or if there's a tragedy and it's an accident and there's no one to be angry at and you can't fault anyone, you can't blame anyone, and sometimes we're even scared to actually get angry at God. Because some people actually feel that. They feel angry at God and they think, well, I can't say that.
I think it's okay to be angry with God.
Well, you know, God gave us these emotions, and I don't really think that God is going to be angry at us for being angry at Him, because this is a human emotion to say, I'm angry at you for the way things turned out. And sometimes we just need to let it out. But if we don't feel justified to let out that anger, or we can't find a place to lay it out on, or someone, you know, like someone to blame, and I'm not saying we should blame someone, but if we feel completely helpless and hopeless and we feel overwhelmed and we don't know who we can be angry at, then we simply turn the anger inwards and we go quiet and we shut down. We don't want to talk to anyone. We don't want to connect with anyone. We don't want to look at anyone in the eyes. We just want to hide. We want to stay dark. And for most guys, they'll either do that or they'll escape the pain by turning to, you know, alcohol or drugs or some other form of addiction. But very rarely will guys pick up the phone and say, I'm feeling down, man. I'm feeling depressed. I'm feeling sad. You know, they'll usually, you know, and usually your friends, your guys will say, oh, don't worry about it, mate. It'll be all right. Let's find another girl, you know, or whatever the stupid thing the guys will tell each other, because they don't know how to be there. And there's only, you know, really, really good friends who have been through it who'll turn around and say, hey, man, if you want to talk about it, let's talk about it. Or it's okay to be angry, or yeah, she was really bad, or yeah, that sucks, or that hurts. But if a guy doesn't talk about it, he just goes quiet and quiet, and then eventually stops. What he eventually does is stop answering, you know, other people's calls, and he stops going out, and he becomes quieter and quieter. And then what does he do? He can't sleep. He starts to experience insomnia, just like Heath Ledger. And then the pills don't work. You're not sleeping. You're taking the pills, but you're still not sleeping after a couple of hours. So you take some more pills. And then what happens? You get to an accidental overdose. Now, in Heath Ledger's case, Danny, there's something else, because, you know, not everything's come out yet. Even if he did it, you know, indirectly or subconsciously, the real loser here isn't us, you and I, and all the other fans of Heath Ledger who watch his movies. It's his 2-year-old daughter.
That was my first thought, and my wife, too. It's incredibly sad to have your dad taken like
that. This is not about if he's going to make another film or the next film that he's going to make or the talent or he could have been this great actor or he was a great actor, but he could have even been bigger. Who cares about that? The only thing that matters here is his 2-year-old daughter, because she's going to grow up with without a father. She's going to know him through what? Through film? That's the real loss here. And people, you know, sometimes we forget that any form of suicide is a very stupid and selfish act. And I know that every one of us has those thoughts or has had those thoughts at some stage of, it's too much, I can't handle it anymore, I just want to escape.
Mm-hmm.
And yet we forget that we have responsibilities. And I guess this is me being almost preachy to say, be aware of what your responsibilities are as a man or as a woman. Because it's easy to get caught up in your own pain and to forget that other people need you. And when we remind ourselves that other people need us, guess what happens to our pain? It lessens. So, for example, if you know that people are depending on you, I'm not saying that you don't get in touch with your pain, but it actually lifts your spirits knowing that people need you, especially if it's children. Because if you're in a place where you're expressing your love to your children and you're able to be there for them, it can lift you out of that bad place. It doesn't always, but it can. And I think, my main point in speaking to so many different media outlets, Danny, is to say that there's a huge difference between the way men handle depression and the way women handle it. It's not that necessarily affects us differently, it's that we respond or react to it differently. Most men don't have any idea what they're feeling. They're not in, women love this expression, you're not in touch with your feeling. But we just don't know what's going on. We feel frustrated, we feel angry. You know, and you'll find these, especially for men, and it's not just the testosterone, because there is a huge difference between the male hormones and the female hormones. And female hormones, when a woman's feeling down, the various hormones that she has, including progesterone and oxytocin, not oxycontin, oxytocin, will encourage a woman to bond with others, hang out with their friends and just talk to them and have a cry. We don't do that. Our male hormone, testosterone, is a hormone of action. It's an active, aggressive, competitive inducing hormone. So what we do is we just get angry. And when we get tired of being angry because everyone tells us they're tired of seeing us angry, then we go quiet and then we just turn it inwards. And that's when you'll see men who look like they've lost their spirit, or they become overweight, or they become unhealthy, or they have no drive, they have no ambition, they have no real life spirit, life force in them, because they've just given up.
Yeah, somebody was saying that they had seen him recently, Heath Ledger, and she said the best word I could use to describe him was unkempt. You know, he wasn't combing his hair, he wasn't dressing, his clothes didn't match at all, and he, like you said, just looked like he kind of gave up.
Isn't that interesting? What does that tell you? When you see someone who's no longer looking after the way they look, not that this is about vanity or superficiality, but when someone doesn't care about keeping themselves clean and combing their hair and dressing well, that's telling you that the person is also doing the same internally. They're letting go. They're disregarding all of their person, their persona. They've stopped dressing well. They've stopped keeping themselves well. And that means they're also doing it probably mentally and emotionally, not just on the outside. And I think you're going to learn a lot more about Heath's real story. And, in the press release that I issued that I know you got, this is just an example of how many men go unnoticed. They suffer quietly. Now, he might have gone to a doctor, but what did the doctor give him? Prescription pills for sleep? That's not the answer.
No, it's not.
I mean, okay, someone says to you, I need to sleep, and it's obviously someone does need to sleep, so you help them. But that's treating the symptom. The lack of sleep is not the cause of your problems. It's the symptom of the deeper problems, whatever they are, whether mm-hmm. it's unrequited love, pain, emotional hurt, a broken family, loss, grieving, etc. And I just think it's really sad that we don't reach out to each other. Here's something really interesting, Danny. You might recall this, and I don't remember whether it was the first Crocodile Dundee movie or the second one, but in the movie, Paul Hogan, playing Crocodile Dundee, comes to America, and he's at a party, and someone introduces someone and says, that's his shrink. And he says, what's that? He says, a psychiatrist, someone, to talk to about when you got problems. And Paul Hogan, as the Crocodile Dundee actor, turns around and says, doesn't she have any mates? Do you realize how profound that was?
Yeah.
And I remember the first time I saw that, I went, is that what they do in America? Because I thought to myself, that's so true. What we usually do in Australia, this is why it's shocking about Heath Ledger, we usually pick up the phone and call our friends and we'll gripe or we'll scream, or we'll, you know, get mad, but we'll talk to people. If you're just going to a therapist purely and simply to talk, then go to a different therapist. Call up your best friend and, you know, dump on them, as they say. You've got to find someone who's going to help you to go a little bit deeper and help you to pull out, you know, the self-doubt, the insecurities, the pain. And I think the other thing, too, that's really interesting here is, because I know you and I have talked a lot about this because of, you know, the kind of people that I work with. Some of them are celebrities, some of them are famous, some of them are rich, some of them are powerful, and some of them are your average everyday people, because I don't rule out working with anyone. But based on some of the fees I charge and my high profile, I get certain people that come to me. And so I want to repeat again, Danny, for everyone listening, without being, you know, a smart ass trying to preach to anyone, but please understand that it doesn't matter how famous you are. It doesn't matter how much money you have. It doesn't matter how much success you have. Nothing external, nothing outside of you can fill the inner emptiness or the emotional pain or the emotional hurt or lost love for that matter. Don't think because people like Heath Ledger, Owen Wilson, Britney Spears, Anna Nicole Smith, or any of these high-profile celebrities, just because they have the money, the fame, the fortune, and the power, don't think for a moment that that takes away their problem. If anything, it contributes to their problems. Because then they don't know what to do. And it's harder for them to reach out for help because we're all watching.
Yeah, it would be difficult. And I saw some video of Heath toward the end. You know, it was taken a few days before he died, and, you know, just surrounded by the photographers and the crowds as he's trying to walk down the New York streets. And I was thinking, if it were me and I had a broken heart and some tears in my eyes, or I'm going to talk with a buddy over a beer and a sandwich, nobody would care. But with him, if that happens, the whole world knows. What's he crying about? Oh, look, he looks sad talking to his friend. Oh, look at that. And flashbulbs going off, and it's I do have some empathy. Some of these stars, are idiots that are in trouble, but I have some...
Well, they definitely are. But you're right, Danny, and here's the other point. Some of them are definitely idiots because they start to fall into delusions of grandeur and delusions of power, thinking they can get away with anything they want, they can do anything what they want, which is what I'm saying, how sometimes the money, fame, and power makes it worse. But the other thing, too, is when you're in that position, there are people who are more interested in sucking off you, you know, becoming a leech. And I don't know if you know what a leech does, but a leech, you know, do you know what a leech is?
Oh, yeah, sure.
Right, so it just clings to your skin and it digs deep and it just sucks the blood out of you. Well, a lot of people do that to these celebrities, you know, in the fake attempt to try and help them or to just find a way to make money off them or to get something from them, to use them. I mean, for example, Dr. Phil shows up to Britney Spears Hospital.
Oh,
he's not invited,
Lord,
by the adult Britney Spears, who happens to be, I think, 26 or something.
Jeez.
Would he do that to an unknown person? If we wrote a letter and said, Dr. Phil, could you please go to this such and such place because my best friend is suffering and she doesn't want to get help?
Of course not.
Would he just show up and say, I'm here to help you?
Yeah.
Would he fly all the way to California on a Sunday and do that? And then would he issue a press release?
I don't think so.
Exactly, and that's the point that I'm making, that sometimes the things that we actually dream about and think are going to make our life easier can make our life a lot harder. So don't think if you get the biggest screen television or the biggest Hummer, the H3 or H4 or whatever one's coming out next, or the bigger house, the four-story house, that it's going to make anything better. It may not. Don't look outside of you to find the answers. And I know that your audience is very spiritual, and I think the majority of them are Christians. So just remember that there's nothing outside of you that's going to... You know, when Jesus talked about be in this world but not a part of it, he was talking on many different levels. He didn't say, like, lock yourself up. He was talking about not falling into the trap of just doing what everyone else is doing. And I sometimes relate that to material possessions, that we think if we can just be a little younger, if we can get rid of the wrinkles, if we can have better shaped boobs, if we can have, you know, a flatter tummy, if we can have straighter hair or longer hair or healthier hair, or if we can have more cash to splash, we'll be happy. And that doesn't ever make up for what you feel about yourself. It all begins from your relationship with yourself. That's what I teach, Dan. I know, I'm sure I've used this expression before on your show. But every relationship begins with you. How much do you like yourself? How much do you accept yourself? And since we're talking to an audience that believes in God and believes in the Bible and believes in Christianity, then I can easily spread the message. Because I was on, I don't think they're a competitor, but I was on XM Radio. And they asked me, they said, look, in closing, Patrick, what's your one message, you know, what's your one key message to help people? And this was, we were talking about Heath Ledger. And I said, forgive yourself and forgive everyone else for everything they did and didn't do, and forgive yourself for everything you did and didn't do. Because when we can get to the place of forgiveness, that really does lift a lot of the pain off our heart. And I know I go through it, and it's a human reaction where we don't want to forgive the other person, Danny. You must have experienced it. I know I have.
Of course.
And you know what the tricky part of it is, the irony? You know why we don't want to forgive the other person? Number one, because we think that we're hurting them. I don't want to give them the satisfaction. And number two, because we think that if we do forgive them, we're condoning what they do, and they'll do it to us again. And what I teach people is, number one, when you choose not to forgive someone else, you're really hurting yourself first. You're not hurting them, you're hurting yourself first. Even if you cut them off, you're still hurting yourself, because that lack of forgiveness is like a poison, a toxin in your body, and it goes round and round, and it's in your body, not in the other person's body. The second thing is, you can forgive someone without condoning what they did. And the third thing is, you can forgive someone but choose not to have them in your life if what they've done is so serious and damaging, or you think they're going to do it again. But ultimately, forgiveness is about you. It's not ever and never about the other person.
No, you're right, and it can't be said enough. You're right.
And what did Jesus say? Forgive, you know, how many times should we forgive? And he says, I don't know, is it 7 times 77 or 77 times 77? But it wasn't about, you know, a specific number of 149 total. It was keep forgiving. And, you know, the concept of love thy neighbor as you love yourself. What does that mean? That means you have to love yourself so you can love someone else. So if it says, hey, Patrick, you know, love Danny the way you love yourself, well, if I'm really disrespectful to myself, if I don't treat my body well, if I put too many drugs and alcohol and junk food, and if I don't get enough sleep, and if I don't exercise, then I obviously don't care about myself, so how am I going to care about you?
That's a really good point.
And the same thing applies to parents. You can't tell your kids don't smoke when you're smoking. You can't tell them don't smoke dope when you're smoking dope. You can't tell them, hey, don't have sex if you're cheating or if you're sleeping around. You've got to be the role model. You've got to be the example. Doesn't mean you have to be perfect, but at least be a role model, because your kids are always looking up to you. All of my work in therapy, Danny, is always about going back in time to the childhood of the adult patients or adult clients I have, going back to their childhood to help them forgive themselves and forgive their parents. And it's always about, I guess what I'm saying is, it's always about helping parents right now to realize you are such a big influence on your children. Your children not only look up to you and worship you, they see you like you're an 8-story building. And they're depending on you, not just on for shelter and protection, but for love and nurturing and caring and attention and validation and recognition and approval and acceptance. So give it to them, because it'll be a lot easier giving it to them now than having to pay for therapy when they become adults.
Or a deathbed reconciliation, which I never want to go through, you know.
You know, and I'll share this with you, Danny, because you already said one thing, but and maybe this will help people listening to relate. I made a big mistake in my life. My father only died a few years ago, and he died young. He died from a stroke. He'd had a couple of strokes. He died angry. And I never knew him. He never knew me. I grew up with both my parents. They were still married to the day he died, but I never knew my father.
Yeah,
my father didn't even know what I did.
Yeah.
My father had no idea who I was. And here's the saddest part, and I want to share this, Danny, because I think that maybe then people realize why I say the things I do, and I don't say it as if I'm holier than thou or greater than anyone else, because I, too, am a human being, and I experience the things that I teach. When my brothers were giving a eulogy for my father, I was listening and thinking, who are they talking about?
Wow, yeah.
Is this my father? I didn't know he did this. I didn't know he did this. I didn't know he did that. He was this. He was that before. I had no idea of my father's life story. My brothers, who are 12 years younger than me, did, but I didn't. I had no idea, and I said, who is this man? And then they were talking about being a kind person and a compassionate person. I said, is that my father they're talking about? because I don't remember him that way. I had a different experience to them, obviously. You know, as 12 years passed, my father changed in terms of the way he responded to his children. But the point is, I made the mistake. You know, so here I am teaching people forgiveness, love, connection, relationships, but I never had that. And sometimes we need the things we teach are the things we need to learn. And the reason I brought this story up is because you said you don't want to wait until you're on your deathbed to reconcile and say, I'm sorry, I wish I had, my greatest regret is, if only I had, if only I could have, if only I did. Take the opportunity now to try and make amends with the people in your life, because you may never get a chance. And that's what's the worst thing, when the person's finally gone, and then you live with regrets. You know, I can't blame my father 100% for not knowing me, because I never told him anything. He'd ask, and I'd say, great, how's everything going? Great, son. You know, he'd say, stay out of politics, keep your nose clean. I mean, that was his expression to me. And he'd say, how's everything going? How's he working? I'd say, great, Dad. Would I tell him anything? No. And so I can't, because every relationship is two-sided. Both people have to open up and speak to each other. It doesn't just work with, you know, well, okay, I didn't say anything to my father because he never asked. Or he wasn't interested, so I shut him down. You know, it was both ways. I didn't make the attempt to get to know him. Now, there might have been many reasons for that as a kid, because my father was very abusive when I was a kid. But the point is, you don't have to live with that forever. You have the opportunity to change that. And, you know, I just worked with a client today who, it was the same story, the relationship she had with her mother. She knew her mother loved her, but her mother was abusive. Now that she's getting the healing, she can heal the relationship with her mother. She has the opportunity to go back and do some of that healing. Fortunately, as it turns out, I'm working with both the mother and the daughter. So the more healing they get, the more that they can forgive themselves, the better relationship they'll have with each other. So a very long-winded way of saying, don't wait until it's too late, because the only thing you'll end up with, you know, when you're close to death, you won't be talking about the things you did. You'll be thinking about the things you didn't do.
That's right.
And it won't be, oh, I wish I'd spent more time on radio. I wish I'd spent more time giving interviews. I wish I'd spent more time fishing. It'll be about, I wish I'd spent more time with mum or dad or brother or sister or wife or son or daughter or whoever the people are that are important to you now. And we get carried away because we think, this is another one I want to do because, you know, I have these great platforms. Parents, please don't think that the most important thing to your child is their college education. It's not. Because when they come to me and they've got the college education and they're making big money, they're spending big money to try and make up for the pain, to try and heal the pain of when mum and dad weren't around because mum and dad were so busy working trying to send them to college. And the kids don't care about that. They just want to know that you're there. So here we are, you know, as parents, most parents running around, working harder, longer, trying to make more money to buy more gadgets for our kid. And we think that's what our kid wants because our kid will probably tell us that. But it's not what they really want. They want your love. They want your attention. They want your approval. They want your acceptance, your validation. They want your recognition. They want your praises, your compliments. They want your support. They want your encouragement. And they want to do things with you, and they want you to listen to them and show interest. These are the things that no college education and no amount of money can ever replace. So if you have the opportunity now to change things, change it now before it's too late. You know, and look at Heath Ledger. It's too late. When Matilda grows up, you know, she'll probably be looked after for the rest of her life financially, I'm sure. I'm sure Heath was well off. He was, do you know, Danny, he was paying $23,000 a month for the apartment he was renting in New York.
It's incredible, yeah.
Because it was the entire fourth floor. And I think the actual apartment belongs to one of the Olsons. I think Mary-Kate Olson. $23,000 a month. That means almost $250,000 a year, more than $250,000 a year, was spent just on the apartment.
Just to rent?
Yeah, on rent. So you know, because, you know, some of these apartments, Danny, are, you know, $10 million, $12 million and more. And I'm sure that when his little daughter, Matilda, grows up, she'll be looked after financially. Her regret won't be about the money or the lack of education. It'll be what she never got to do with her father. Not knowing him, not spending time with him, etc., etc. So again, you know, money and materialism isn't the most important thing. It's the love that you share. Jesus didn't say about growing empires and kingdoms. His message was always a message of love and forgiveness. And if we can learn anything from Heath Ledger's loss, his tragic loss, then let's learn that about what's really important, about love, about acceptance, about forgiveness, and about responsibility as adults, as parents. Yes, we're going to feel pain, but once you have a child, you've got to think of your children, and your children will come first. They should come first.
But not in money and in
gifts. No, exactly. Yeah. Sorry, let me clarify that. I mean coming first exactly. In terms of being responsible for them, understanding what they need, giving them what they need, being there for them.
So I would tell Heath Ledger, if I had a chance, I have to wonder, you know, why he must have had friends, he must have had family, but to remind him before you do anything silly, outrageous, regrettable, you have a 2-year-old life that you are responsible for, and if nothing else, no matter how depressed you are, no matter how sad you are, no matter how sick or ill you are, you must wake up in the morning and be the father.
And the same thing applies to mothers. If you're the parent, they need you. And, you know, it's very strange for Heath because it's not a typical Aussie thing. The Australian usually turns to his mates for help. Now, I'm sure that he also missed Australia. Here he is in America. He may have missed his mates. He may have missed his friends. He may have missed some of his life in Australia. I don't know the full details, but it's a tragic loss nonetheless. And I, you know, in terms of the message that we just recorded, the message of love and approval and, you know, what kids need. Because most people don't even understand what the concept is of nurturing. And they think, well, what is nurturing? Nurturing is simply everything that the child needs to grow and to realize its full potential.
Yep. No, I think I got that down. I think I'm doing the dad thing, you know, pretty good. Not perfect, but pretty good. And compared to the way I was raised, I tell Adam every once in a while, not often, but I said, you have no idea, man. You know, my dad would never take me bowling. My dad never went with me to a movie. My dad never did these things. So I hope you look around and see, you know, on times when, oh, I don't have the latest video game or something, that you really do have parents that love you and look after you and a dad that likes being with you. I enjoy being with Adam.
I went to 2 movies in my entire life with my father,
mm-hmm.
and that's all I remember ever doing with him. He never came to any of my football games, never came to any of my school plays or musicals, nothing.
Nothing. I think my dad took me to a Detroit Tigers professional baseball game once, I remember that, but never Little League, never anything to do with school. He never asked me one time, how am I doing in schoolwork, can I see your report, I'll go to the school with you and chaperone a trip or something. So, you know, it's a completely different world. He won't know the opposite of it, but my whole goal is at some point when he's 35, he'll look back and say, you know, that was all right, man.
You're exactly right, Danny. I was on the beach recently, and there was a father there just throwing ball to his son. You know, not quite playing baseball, but just sort of playing catch, I guess. And I walked past to his father, and I could see the smile on the kid's face, and I said to the dad, I said, when this kid grows up, this is what he's going to remember.
No, you're right.
These are going to be his great memories. On the beach, with dad, playing catch.
Mm-hmm.
They're the things that you can't buy. And so when your son grows up to be 35, he doesn't need to know the bad to appreciate the good. He'll remember those as great memories.
Yep.
Because that's what happens when we get to our deathbed. We think back about the really special moments. You know, when we're close to death, or when we've almost lost everything, is when we start to focus on what's really important in life. And it's not the tangible things. It's the intangible. Mm-hmm. It's those moments. Moments with mom, moments with dad, moments with brother, moments with sister, etc., etc. And I think we can never lose sight of those things. We have to hold on to them.
Well, it's pretty obvious. I mean, the world's greatest leader and teacher, you know, came to us on a donkey and wearing a robe. So he didn't have any bulletproof cars or a retinue around him or a crew or any bling or nothing, you know.
So. And I bet he just appreciated life.
Yeah, I think he did. And anyway, Patrick, we got to do this again, man. I'm sorry that I know you're busy and building your career and you're doing it the right way, helping people. And you're always welcome, man. I enjoy talking to you. And someday, either I got to come there or you come up here. Yeah, there you go. Well, that's great. That's good.
But Danny, it's always a pleasure. And I'm glad and I appreciate you for allowing me the opportunity to get out a positive message to help other people.
Well, back at you, Patrick.
All right. Thanks, Danny. Take care.
See you, bud.